Les colloques du Collège de France.
Thanks so much, Patrick. First of all, thank you very much. It's really an honor to be here. Congratulations, Seth, for all the trajectory and for this chair. I was aware that how important it is in France just when I came over here. So I think it's a really nice recognition that the people from your country is giving to you. And happy birthday for tomorrow also. And we met not at the beginning, but we met through the development of polypeptides. So our lab in Valencia and the creation of PTS in 2012, it really make us meet because we had the first European project that allows PTS to survive because as a small spin-off company is not easy. It was PeptiCaps that Sebastian was with Damien from Cidetec in Spain. And that money allowed us to make the first large batch of in a scale-up, that is the PTS is at CDMO. So it's really allowed us to survive. So it's a good trajectory many years ago, but it's keeping in the same direction. So today, in our lab in Valencia, we are having the idea of that we have to understand and the problems that we do have in the clinics, as we've been hearing this morning with amazing talks. If we understand where is the pathology and which are the biological barriers that we need to cross to reach the molecular target and be efficient, then we will be able to use our chemical tools to really arrive more efficiently and make that the therapeutics are more efficient and less toxic and really amplify those armory or those tools that the clinicians have, because there are many, many diseases that we don't have any solution, and we are increasing in aging, for example, other new diseases that are coming over, and we don't have any solution for them. So what we are doing in the lab in Valencia is taking these images all together. I have people from biology, from chemistry, veterinaries also, a material scientist for sure, and when we are designing something, before designing any of our nanosystem, we are understanding, we have many collaboration in clinics to understand which are the markers for the patients. So we are trying to make a nanomedicine, a polymer therapeutics for a specific setup of markers, functional biomarkers that we set, that can activate this nanomedicine in a subpatient population. So understanding these functional biomarkers help us to better design the polypeptides. We use polypeptides as materials. I will show you as examples through how they talk, because they are versatile, they are biocompatible in a way that they are biodegradable materials, and they degrade in amino acids that are endogenous for the body. So if we are not only looking at metastatic tumors, we are also looking for long-term diseases like Alzheimer's or Parkinson's, so you need something that is safe for the patient. So the polypeptides allow us this versatility, multivalency to play with the structure and also to fine-tune and to modify these assemblies and this to cross the biological barriers. So when we characterize the materials to be sure that we are able to translate to the clinics, not only understanding what we have in the vial, not only the identity, but also how they present in solution is critically important. So characterization in the real physiological environment is important to understand this bio-nano interface, because the interaction at the bio-nano interface, it will really triggers the capability of these nanomaterials to reach the target. So if on the amino acids, for example, you have many, many side chains where you can really fine-tune the zeta potential, the size, the shape, and then you can understand how these different sizes or shapes that you saw this morning, how they behave, they can reach even the small organelles that I will show you today also an example. So the story with the polypeptide came when I arrived to Valencia from my postdoc with Ruth Duncan. With her, I was working with acrylates, and I wanted to change to biomaterials and cell therapeutics at that moment. They had the PGA plaquetaxel in clinical trials, phase 3 clinical trials. They gave us 100 grams of polyglutamates. I was using that, and after 6 years, I finished and then we have to make ourselves the PGA. So as a polymer material chemist, We did it, the polymer chemistry, and nothing was really easy because the NCA polymerization is not a trivial machine, is not a trivial reaction, and you have to control many things to really have these materials ready to go to the patient. So a very smart postdoc chem is the material, Matthias Bar with Aroa Duro, that they are both involved also in the company. And they started with a non-nucleophilic BF4 initiators that are really coming from SLAD strategy of having this non-nucleophilic salts to really control this living polymerization in the polymers. This allows us to control the polydispersity, the starting and the end point, because in the physiological media, even if they are biodegradable, if you modify the end terminal group, you can have cyclic gamma glutamyl, and this is changing completely the degradability of the polymers. So we really need to control how we polymerize and how we modify these polymers. Then this was the origin of this PTS. So because we wanted to control, to have a quality tools for scale up the materials, PTS came to play, and now it's a CDMO with 100 workers. It was acquired by our American venture capital fund, like Arcline, and they are playing with different amino acids. We have different architectures, and these different architectures give us different readouts. These different readouts, also coming from more brine system, you can really trigger this self-assemble that we saw this morning. And with this self-assemble, there are many different properties, especially that are with the polyglutamates, with the polyanions or the polycations that are unexpected. In the case we are working with VTA core polyglutamates, because we wanted to have something that has a longer circulation time. If you have something with longer circulation times, the EPR effect that was mentioned this morning, Professor Kataoka, is enhanced, because you have something that can be accumulated in a tumor or in an inflammation site. But then when you have something that is very large, if you have a very thick tumor, for example, it's difficult to get in. So we wanted to have something dynamic to have an enhanced circulation time, and then breaking it down in pieces to deeply go to the tumor, or to have enough time to cross the BBB, for example, it went from these Trojan horses. So we moved to the star shape, and then we found that with these materials, based on Meyer's work on the supramolecular assembly of this core, we thought that we were able to have a supramolecular assembly with this hydrophobic core, we could grow on this. But what happened is we make the first time that we did, we have 50 amino acid units, thread brands. It was 50 glutamic acids, polyanion. And then, yes, we increased the concentration, we increased the size. This was done in water, non-buffer solution. But we didn't have any order structure for the molecule, so we have a collapse in nanoparticles. So they were not the core having a place. So we were increasing the size, decreasing the zeta potential because they were polyanions, and the system were only to be able to be disrupted with non-ionic buffering. But also in the circular dichroism, we saw that only the star system were shifting in the circular dichroism, telling that there is electrostatic interactions coming from the branches. So at that time also we found this paper from Mutu Kuman, a physicist, where we're explaining that having a highly dense an ionic core cloud with a contour anion also very dense surrounded, we can create transient dipoles that are very stable. So they were forcing this supramolecular assembly because of this extraordinary ordinary behavior, transient behavior. So with this, if we play with the structure of the universe, we can really reach different type of solution conformation with our system in a water solution. And this was the starting point of many projects in the lab with these materials, because we can fine-tune this equilibrium and then implementing different stabilization procedures, we can really have them stable in the circulation. Alex and Vicente, that is the CTO of PTS now, we can play with the hydrophobic hydrophilic and also with even the contour anions. And with all these architecture changes and different ratios, we can really have a toolbox with different type of systems that can play these different solution conformations when we go to the physiology. So for example, if we have a chain where we have a more hydrophobic core, we have very small chains, like 10, we have for sure, supramolecular assembly. So the BTA core, the height of the pi stacking is really growing the fibers, and we can really have nice fibers that they can change and they mature, and we have changes understanding all this conformation. We can also, if we grow a little bit more, the chance we can go up to 25 glutamic acid, for example. We have very discrete routes where we can encapsulate drugs, and then we use it as a drug delivery system. And we following growing the chains, we arrive to the original example that I saw you, where we have a collapse system where electrostatic interaction of the branches are really playing a role. So this material or this strategy is quite versatile with a system to have different structure and to stabilize. And I was mentioning what we are doing in the lab is really derivatizing with orthogonal chemistries the unimers before we do as the assemble. So having this hydrophobic hydrophilic ratio as we want to, and also having discrete functionalities, we can have different cross-linking strategies, biodegradable or non-biodegradable, that stabilize the system, and also we can add some units and drugs either here, or if we want them to be very nicely exposed, we can have it conjugation in the surface to have also for the peptide, for the targeting, or for any other modification. And this is really open up, as I mentioned, different possibilities. So if we want to go to the brain and or any mucose-dependent barrier, this cross-linking strategy is allowing us, for example, to group some thiol functionalities. Thiol functionalities are mucoadhesive, mucodiffusive. So having the thiol groups as a cross-linking strategy, or so having a surface decoration with lectins, for example, we can explore the intranasal route for brain delivery. And with this, we had using the skin mucosa as a screening approach for, because the skin mucosa is the one that resembles better for the human, at least for ex vivo. But in vivo, you know, because it's much bigger, but in ex vivo it was the most similar one. So we explored different architectures, different functionalities, and we have different permeation. This is a France cell, so you put the sample here, you put the mucosa here, and you get in the receptor chamber how fast or how much of the system cross here when we label them with fluorophores. So we have like a first screening with different architectures, different modalities, and we selected two of them. One was with the lectins in the surface, and the other one with this cross-linking with the thiols. But this was not enough, so we developed also a hydrogel system as a permeator enhancer where we could embed these nano carriers. And this permeation enhancer was firstly used by the company for doing dermocosmetics for skin delivery, and that was also the origin of Peptikas. We were having this hydrogel. This is hyaluronic acid cross-linked with polypeptides, but also we discover now that this hydrogel can embed it different nanocarriers, and for the mucosa delivery, it's allowing to have, this is the pairs, the three pairs in grid, so it's allowing to have for a long resident. And even with the nature of the nanocarrier, we can really accumulate the different nanocarriers in different areas of the brain. So we have explored here with different biologics. So we are working with the bile debron with Parkinson's disease, and we have transport, for example, GBA protein, or we have transported also PDL1 for glioblastoma in combination with others. So this type of platform for intranasal is something that understanding the barrier and putting the functionalities in the carrier is allowing us to really use even or promote biologics that they are not really crossing the blood-brain barrier to reach the target site. Another example where we can play with architecture and understanding the biological context is the tumor microenvironment. In the tumor microenvironment, we have different aspects. We have different triggers. We mean triggers like conditions like pH, redox potential, different presence of metalloproteases, other type of peptidases. So understanding all these possibilities, you know, the Ross reaction, we can engineer different type of linking chemistry that we can put in the systems that can only react in the tumor microenvironment. We have also, apart from this, we have also different type of cells. So the immune cells are in the tumor microenvironment, so immunomodulation is critical for that aspect. So it's not only reaching the stroma of the tumor, we have also to play with the immune system, with the immune cells that are circulating in the lymph nodes. So we need a cooperation effect. So you need carriers to go to the lymph nodes to promote the CD8 T cell, for example, and cooperate with the drugs itself that go to the stroma. And also we have a lot of cellular communication like exosomes. And all of these cells have mitochondria all over. And mitochondria, for example, is the energy source for any type of cell. And the mitochondria in cancer is a critical element where we can really promote or modulate cell death mechanisms. But also, the mitochondria can modulate the plasticity and the mechanobiology of the tumor microenvironment. So tackling mitochondria and tumor microenvironment is extremely important. And also, not only in cancer, but also in many other diseases. So today, I will show you examples of these three things here that I don't think I have time for the exosomes, but how we can, playing with the polymers, we are able to really, and the linking chemistry, to go specifically and to have this tropism that allow us to enhance the therapies that we are working with. So how we test the system, not only is important to control and to characterize well the materials to control the synthesis, but also to understand where we test these materials, because not all the animal models, not all the preclinical models are relevant for testing. And there is not a unique model. We need to understand which question we ask to each model, because they are complementary answers. So there is not an absolute answer. So for that, if we want to mimic the tumor microenvironment, we do 3D systems, but depending on if we are tackling the immune system, we will use PBMCs with the tumor cells, or if we use the CAFs, like the fibroblasts, like the cancer-associated fibroblasts, we're looking at mechanobiology, we will have heterospheroids with CAFs. But also patient-derived is important because the heterogeneity of patients to patient is something that we need to reflect in the treatment. So these 3D models are extremely important, and because of the complexity of the system, also now they're more advanced, this laponati, where you have the channels, the microfluidics mimicking the blood circulation and endothelial vessels. So all these systems are the ones that are used more and more in the lab and also in many others, and trying to mimic what we will find in the patient and trying to avoid that many animal models. But still, the animal model, especially when you are working with vaccines, with immunotherapy, is there because it's playing a role. So we have many models in the lab. We characterize completely the models, understanding, for example, it's a breast cancer metastatic model. So when the metastasis come up, so in a murine model, at 3 days, you already have metastasis in the lungs. But then in a human model, non-immunocompetent, so we have the metastasis happening in 21, and in day 28, for example, we have exosome release and biomarkers. So we're looking at microenvironment, also the vasculature is very important, and or bone metastasis, like mimicking metastasis in the bone. So we need to have the models to ask specifically the questions for each of the systems, and also understanding that not a model can answer all the questions, and characterizing them properly. So going to the linkers, you will see here the differences. So having a model in 2D or 3D, this is breast cancer, 4 different subtypes. We have luminal A, luminal B that are hormone dependent, HER2 positive and triple negative breast cancer. So the levels of different triggers that we call functional biomarkers, because we are doing some of prodrugs, we are making the linker, making the whole system, and we only need to activate this system in the tumor microenvironment or in the cell. So we need to put these linkers, the bioresponsiveness, depending on the patient characteristics. So, for example, if you compare the 2D with the 3D, you see different expression of cathepsin B. Cathepsin B is important to us because it's a protease that degrades polyglutamides, for example. So we have the redox environment. So you see that it's very different in the different 2D or 3D cell lines, and also among the different subtypes, and also the ROS levels. At the end, the GSH expression and the ROS levels are compensating, and you have a ratio among both of them that you need to understand. And also the pH in this case, breast cancer is not a difference, but also there are some tumors that are much more acidic than others. So having these characteristics, these triggers, allow us to understand which linkers to put. Very quickly, a couple of examples. always when you have 3D models, you have a much lower activity for the polymers in vitro because it's more difficult for them to penetrate to the cell. So you compare two different cell lines, the luminal A and the triple negative breast cancer. You see here the different expression of cathepsin. B activity you see here is very different for the two cell lines, and having the free drug and a conjugated drug with a pH labile. So in this case, we are not much difference because the pH, it was very similar in both cell lines, but you have less activity in the polymer compared to the free. But when you go to a linker that is a redox dependent, this is a Fasudil, it's another drug that is a ROCK inhibitor that we use also in cancer for metastasis and spinal cord injury applications. But this cefalimolati linker for that is cleave off in presence of redox environment, it was clearly less active in luminal A than it was in triple negative. And that happened because the ratio between the ROS expression and the TS expression, it was having much greater effect, significantly different in one to another. So if I'm going to design a linker or a nanomedicine for a triple negative breast cancer, most probably I will use a redox-dependent linking chemistry than a cathepsin B linking chemistry, for example, because I can be more specific in that sense. This is going for the patient-derived, so this is an example of using a cathepsin B as a functional biomarker. So these are three different organoids from patients. This is luminal A, and these two are triple-negative breast cancer. You see here, in the case of the free drug, there is no mature differences, but in the case of the conjugate, because it has more expression of cathepsin B, you have a greater activity in the luminal A patient, like the hormone-dependent patient, and not in the triple-negative. So it's very important, this design and understanding the biology. And also, this is the biology with the linkers and with the polymers that I showed you before. Also, it's very important to understand how they behave physiologically. So if we compare, for example, with the polyglutamates, these are the linear polyglutamate with 50 units, the triple branch system, the star-shaped polyglutamate with 50 amino acid units in each of the branches, and the cross-linking system here that I show you, stabilized using click chemistry. So we derivatize aside and propagyl, and we stabilize it, the system. You see here comparing when you inoculate it intravenously, the half-life of the linear is very different for the half-life of the cross-linked material. So you go from less than an hour to almost 4 days. But not more importantly, when you analyze, this is a biodistribution where we take all the organs and quantify the amount of fluorophore because we label the polymers with Cy5, that near infrared light, and we quantify how much is in each in the organ. We found that in the lymph nodes for the cross-linked material, we have a 40% uninjected dose in these cases. So in these cases, why it was happening here? We have a system that is larger. This is 80 nanometers compared with this one that is around 12 nanometers, and the linear one is around 7-8 nanometers when you have a hydrophobic drug. And also, the zeta potential here is minus 60, between minus 40 and minus 60, depending on the derivatization. Here you have minus 20, and similar to here. So the greater zeta potential, negative zeta potential, and the greater size is really driven that this cross-linked material has a lymphotropism. When we saw this, we really started the possibility to go for vaccination, because if you can drive some antigens or some specific immunomodulators to the lymph node, you can enhance significantly the adjuvancy of any cancer treatment. And these materials excreted all of them renally because they are anionic. All anionic materials excrete renally. They are also hydrophilic. They are not usually doesn't go to the lungs, to the liver, sorry, because they are only a little bit, but not much, because they are not hydrophobic and they don't present. We studied many studies. They are completely stealth, and so if you don't functionalize them with any hydrophobic moiety, they are really can go there without the MPS system being aware and not accumulating in the liver. So we have a renal excretion. We have some examples of renal tropism for different applications like acute kidney injury, but today I will show you the example we just recently published with Elena Florindo in a nano-vaccination setup. So this was because they have this lymphotropism going to the lymph node, we make an anti-cancer nano-vaccine by conjugating the surface of the material two different MHC1, MHC2, targeting the two major complexes for the immune system. So we have a multivalent nanovaccine or GP100 that is for melanoma cancer. So we conjugated both of them. The peptides, one is a 12 amino acid and the other, or 9 amino acid, the other one is a 12 amino acid peptide. We link through a bisulfide linking chemistry, you see here. So they are, when they arrive to the antigen presenting cell, they are cleaved off and do the job there, and having in a specific ratio, we can target the cells in a very specific manner. So what we found, the first thing, we inoculated in a non-tumor model, and after 16 days, we recover the spleen, and we saw that the cells that they were uptaking our materials were the circulating dendritic cells. They were no macrophages significantly. And when these are driving to the lymph nodes, this is the cross presentation of two receptors, CD86, CD80. That means that we are triggering the expression of CD8 T cells, CD8 positive T cells, but also the CD4 positive T cells, that they are compensatory mechanism. So we have a cross presentation, so we have a very, very active immune stimulation. So in a melanoma model, it's an immunocompetent model, a B16F10, when we have the both peptide in the same carrier, we have a nicer, a much nicer anti-tumor effect than when we have the two per separate or compare with the three peptides together. And this, it was antigen specific. You see here with the group, with the tetramer assay, we have GP100 target specific. And also, if we different type of expression always enhanced by when you have the combination. But what it was really interesting to us, when we take the lymph nodes and study the distribution of the materials, compare the multivalent and the single. So what we saw, it was a very nice distribution in the lymph node, but also that the multivalent or the monovalent system were interacting not only with the different cells in the lymph node, but also with the lymphatic endothelial cells and the blood endothelial cells. So the multivalent vaccine, it has a major colocalization with the brain and with the blood endothelial cells compared with the single that it was most in the lymphatic. So the pro-inflammatory activity that this system are doing in the lymph node are also influencing by the effect that it has in the blood. So we have, in this case, not only the CD8, but also the CD4 having this core immunostimulation. These are killing directly the tumor cells. These are modulating the tumor microenvironment. So therefore, we are diminishing the expression only of immunosuppressive co-proteins like PD-L1, for example, that are in the tumor microenvironment. So we have a co-operative effect because we are touching different type of cells in the lymph node itself. So we conjugate or we compare with the first line therapy in the treatment, like it's like the antibody that PD-1. So macroscopically, we have exactly the same activity. This is a PDX model. We are with expressing GP100. It's from patients. So we inoculated PBMC to humanize this model. And they are not the best because the host is taking afterwards the tumor of the animal. But so far, this is not an easy way to demonstrate immunotherapy. But it was the only way so far that we can demonstrate that in a more humanized approach, our system was also working. But so you see that already the conjugate alone, the multivaccine alone, it was acting as well as the combination. But if you look or explore the expression of the different immunomodulator systems, you see that when you have the combination, you have also a decrease in the immune suppression on the tumor microenvironment. So it's really synergizing with any possible leftovers of the expression of PD-1 in the tumor microenvironment. That's why this multivalent nanovaccine is very efficient. So this is really how making things in the right place is really enhancing a therapy. And now moving to our to the mitochondria, not only the in an organ or to the tumor that we can accumulate also, we are going to a subcellular organelle. And why this one? Because the mitochondria really is the powerhouse of the cell, and it's really the key. If we fine-tune specifically the mitochondria, we can really do a lot of things, and we can really help many pathologies. It's been very popular, the mitochondria, lately. So science cover is 2-3 months ago, and there are companies there, but they are not. There are peptides that are out for mitochondria in the clinical trials, but they are not nanomedicine specifically targeting mitochondria still there. So looking at how many possibilities we have in a dysfunctional mitochondria, you can go for not only cancer, but also many, many rare diseases. And if you think of all the targets that you need to cross, you need to first understand the differential features of the mitochondria. So there are different peptides that you can go there, and there is a specific type of, after endocytosis of the nanomedicines, you can have some residues that have been used to really go, like TPP or the ketopeptides. But there are others that have not been explored. So for example, or less explored, this cardiolipin, that is the one that we are interested on, was the target with the setopeptide, Schiller peptide, but it's a unique peptide in the mitochondria. This cardiolipin is known anywhere else at all. And for example, in cancer, cardiolipin is a marker of bad prognosis. So the expression of cardiolipin in mitochondria is also related, for example, with the bad prognosis of specific tumors. So looking at previous work from Kielinski, we found that prolines can have, proline is a nice amino acid to play with, and Seth is also working with that a lot. Proline has, it could be really something that could help us to go to mitochondria, because Kielinski was derivatizing the prolines with lysines to have this type of materials that really demonstrated that when we enhance the conformation of PP2, that is typical for the polyprolines, you can go better to the mitochondria. But if you look at the structure, these structures are not allowing us to conjugate anything, because we like to really fix through linking chemistry our system. So we wanted to have something cost efficient, as we learned from the company that this is like more reproducible, cost efficient, and easy to produce. So we look at just in case it's two blocks. So we know that to go to the cardiolipin, that is a negatively charged lipid, we need something that is positive. And we play with the polyproline. So the polyproline, and we play with different polycations, polylysine, polyarginine, polylysine, polyhistidine, polyornithine. And just with a two-step reaction, we could really nicely produce this type of diblocks. The diblocks with different ratios also change the conformation, and this different ratio between the polycation and the polyproline blocks are also very important for the final targeting to the mitochondria. These are oligomers. They are not really large materials and very small, so we have to use fluorescent correction spectroscopy to really characterize them, and depending on the bigger they are, the most polyproline 2 conformation they have. So we did a lot of synthesis. You see the different ratios, the different polycationic residues characterized completely. And I'm marking these three here because of all of them, only these three were targeting the mitochondria. We are able to really colocalize in mitochondria. And which is the common thing among these three is because all of them are polyornithine as the polycationic residue, and all of them are 1-3 polyornithine polyproline. So trying to understand why these diblocks were those that were working for the mitochondria, first we scale up the system. So we scale the 622, and using design of experiments, they optimize the scale-up process, and we have now this is very cheap to produce it and scale up. So that was not a problem. So we studied in the cells a concentration, and it was not toxic, and exploring the cell uptake at 37 and 4 degrees, trying to understand if these materials were going in the cells by endocytosis or by other mechanisms. So having uptake at 4 degrees, it means that you are also entering the cells by non-energy dependent mechanism, and that's really most of the cells or the mitochondria isolated after the incubation with the conjugate were positive for the material. You see here the three of them that I show you as an example, you colocalize very nicely very early, at 15 minutes you already have nice colocalization, and this was very homogeneous in all the models. So the mitochondria were all of them, you see the purple, so you have the polymer that has ATO as a fluorescent probe, and also you have labeling the mitochondria, labeling the lysosome, and also you have like this purple, like is the colocalization of the mitochondria with the polymer. So it was really nicely colocalizing very quickly. The colocalization of this, it was non-polarization driven colocalization. So the classical ways to mark mitochondria in the cells are with mitotrackers, red and green. Mitotracker green is non-differential polarization effective. Mitotracker red is really targeting the mitochondria because of the difference of polarization. And if you use a depolarized agent, you saw that our system, you cannot see it really well here, is non-dependent on the polarization of the mitochondria. And then we really went to see if the cardiolipin was playing a role. This cardiolipin, working with Latvia and also with Max Planck in a European proposal, an ITN that was just finished with Jan and Seb was also involved there with a very nice student, Camila. And Yusuf, they demonstrated with GOOFs, with this cardiolipin labeled lipid or theoretical vesicles, that only with cardiolipin was present, they were able to have this colocalization in there. And also, there was another effect that they found, that there was a kind of a clustering only when the polyprolylene polyornithine diblock system with the 1,3 were. So it was a patch formation when this cardiolipin was affected. So this patch formation is quite dense and is really buckling the mitochondria, so the membrane of the mitochondria. So what is happening is we are accumulating in these cardiolipin-enriched areas, and then you are deforming, and this buckling in the system is really driven the better accumulation in the mitochondria in the inner membrane. So you are really changing the fluidity on the mitochondria and having this patch formation, because that was the unique differential feature of this polypropylene polyornithine compared to the other polycationic systems. So we believe this is the mechanism it is working at the mitochondrial level. Now we are understanding what's going on at the cellular level, and we believe, because we are very aware that pharmacologically we are not able to use this as a small system, so we are including them in other or in larger materials. So looking at activity, we have these oligomers in the seahorse. That is an equipment where you're looking at mitochondrial activity. So in the seahorse, we accumulated at different time points. So we understand that these oligomers were induced, right, it was inducing mitochondrial depolarization, and also it was increasing the ROS formation, the reactive oxygen species. So they are really targeting there pharmacologically also. They are also able to normalize or to modify the oxygen production, and going using the Ouroboros, this is happening because they are acting at the level of the Oxford. So we believe these materials are reaching the inner membrane of the mitochondria to have the effect. But also if we look at the TEM, what is happening that these materials can be also toxic for the cell if you use them alone. So in cancer, it's really nice. In cancer, you can have a synergism when you are using them because they are really swollen, and there you can do breaking. You generate this vacuolization, this mitophagy. But if you want to use them for regenerative approaches, this is not good. So if we put them, we need to really compensate this strong binding and this mitophagy. What we did for that, we use a normal carrier that we use in the lab, like polyglutamates. So this is a polyanionic. So we were doing like a more like a sweeteronic type, playing with this membrane fluidification. And with the polyglutamates, we still have a very nice colocalization, very nice uptake, not only at 37 but also at 4 degrees, very nice patch formation, and also there were accumulation. And in this case, we had the same activity at the mitochondrial level, but we would be able to find very intact mitochondria with no damage there. So if you put these oligomers as a vector in our well-established nanosystem, you can change the pharmacology of the system really having this tropism to the mitochondria. In the consortium was also Ben Feringa, and Camila was working with Ainhoa, and we put this polymer with molecular motors. It was something that the ITN was looking for, to look at these molecular motors to go in the cell. So we derivatized the molecular motor that was changing by switching of the light, and we derivatized through a semi-telekallic system in both cases. And they did a great job because it was really nice. I don't know if you can see here, but when they was switching the light, you can go and you see like a kind of a spherical particle to go to a more elongated system upon light irradiation. So the polymer was really not affecting at all the molecular motor, and it was even enhancing the internalization. So we have also accumulation and colocalization in the mitochondria and very nice uptake in the cells. This also can be worked as a vector with the anti-cancer drug, as I mentioned. So if we derivatize these oligomers with drugs like Tocil or lonidamide that are specifically targeting mitochondria for cancer, you can keep the colocalization and also that time. Okay, so we go. And then you can keep the activity and synergize, and even as a vector for LNPs, for example, to enhance cytosolic delivery, because you can push to the cytosol. So with this, I'm wrapping up. So these vectors are really targeting mitochondria as a tool to go to enhance tropism intracellularly, but you need to design also the rest of the system to have the adequate PK/PD and to reach the tumor site. So with this, thank you again for the audience. These are the people working and doing the work, many, many collaborators and funding agencies. Thank you so much for your attention.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.